Chapter 16. Cadmus watched the readout on his command lectern, swallowing as the power levels in the engine core continued to rise. In a matter of moments, the reactors were going to explode and destroy the Sisyphean, and though every fibre of his being rebelled against such a course of action, he knew Wayland was right. If by their deaths they could kill a traitor Primarch, then they would have achieved something worthwhile after all. He knew he should say something to the crew, final words to express the honour he felt at having served with them, but the words wouldn't come. Branthon would have given a valediction that would have survived his sacrifice, words that would live on beyond his death and be quoted by men and women facing their own demise. Tyro had nothing, and never had he felt more like an inadequate replacement for Captain Ulrak Branthon. He looked over at Sabek Wayland, but the Iron Father would not meet his gaze, too fixed on the reading streaming into the engineering station. Garuda flapped its metal wings in the upper reaches of the bridge, cawing and swooping down around the Eldar guide. If Varuchi Vora was irritated by the bird's attentions, he gave no sign.
"How long?" asked Tyro.
Wayland looked up.
"I'd estimate around 3.5 minutes."
Tyro cleared his throat.
"We did some good out here, Sabek," he said.
Wayland nodded.
"Aye, Captain," he said, "that we did. Ferrus would be proud of us."
"I'll settle for not being a disgrace," said Tyro.
Wayland looked confused by that, but his response was broken off when the Vox station crackled with an incoming transmission. A blare of emergency horns and whooping brays of superheated steam filled the bridge, but through it all cut a voice that was part desperation, part gleeful anarchy.
"Cadmus! Cadmus! Are you there?"
called Freighter Thematica.
"Freighter, is that you?"
"Yes, of course it is," answered Thematica. "Who else would it be?"
"Damn you, Thematica! You've killed us all!" spat Tyro.
"Not yet, boy, but keep interrupting me and you might."
"What are you talking about?"
"Is Freighter Wayland still on the bridge?"
asked Thematica over the crashing bangs and screeching sirens from the engineering spaces. Wayland rushed over to the Vox station and grabbed the speaker horn.
"I'm here, Freighter," he said. "You're drawing all the excess energy into the engines."
"I am," agreed Thematica.
"They'll go critical in under 3 minutes."
"I think you'll find it slightly over 3 minutes, Freighter," said Thematica. "You can't beat in-situ data recording, but accuracy aside, you need to get Cadmus to transfer command authority to the data engine down here. I need the ship."
"Not a chance," snapped Tyro. "I'm not giving you the ship's last command."
"You have to," barked Thematica, all levity gone from his voice. "And do it quickly, Captain, or we are all dead."
"Dead? We're already dead, Thematica," said Tyro. "You've seen to that. You're going to blow up the ship."
"Don't be ridiculous," said Thematica. "I'd never blow up this grand old ship. Well, not deliberately, anyway. Now, you listen to me, Cadmus Tyro. I've been pushing starships to the edge of their tolerances and beyond since before you got your fist lopped off. Now, transfer command to my data engine, and I swear by the 7 sacred shadows of Karashi that we will live through this. And if we don't, well, it won't matter anyway."
Tyro looked up at Wayland, who shrugged with incomprehension.
"What are you planning?" asked Wayland.
Thematica's amusement was audible even over the noise below decks.
"You'll see, Sabek," he said, "but best get that guide ready at the helm. Oh, and one last thing."
"What?"
"Hold on to something."
The breaching charges were in place and ready to break open the guts of the Iron Hands ship. Every legionary of the Iron Warriors was a demolitions expert, and Kroger was no exception. Within minutes of the embarkation deck's clearance, he had rigged charges capable of tearing through the heavy armour of the blast doors. Kroger checked the ring of explosives around the main shutter one last time and jogged back towards Perturabo. The Primarch had said nothing since the last of the Iron Hands had been killed, walking among the dead as though seeking something lost. Forex was at his side, the wily old first captain having delegated the placement of his demolition charges.
"We're ready to breach," said Kroger, arriving at Perturabo and Forex's side.
The iron circle formed a wide ring around the Primarch, their number smaller by two. That the Iron Hands had managed to destroy any of the battle robots had surprised Kroger, but he should have known the 10th Legion was never one to lie down and take a beating. Once again, Kroger had been honoured to watch his Primarch in battle, and standing in the ruin of another crushing victory, Kroger had never been prouder to serve the 4th Legion. Perturabo surveyed the aftermath of the fighting, the dead bodies, the wrecked vehicles, and the torn-up remains of flesh. Backlit by the flames of a gutted rhino, he stood taller than Kroger remembered. His cloak lifted and flapped in the thermals of the fires, and the black and gold gemstone in the skull brooch caught the firelight. Perturabo nodded and dropped to one knee with his hand pressed to the deck.
"Not yet, Triarch," said Perturabo. "I need a moment."
Kroger looked over at Forex.
"They'll be regrouping at choke points deeper in the ship," he said, knowing that Perturabo and Forex must surely be aware of this.
"They are, indeed," said Perturabo, "and we will root them out and destroy them. It will be difficult, and we will lose many warriors along the way."
"We lose more the longer we wait," said Kroger.
"I know that."
"Then I don't understand why you're hesitating, my lord."
"You mistake consideration for hesitation, Kroger. I am giving our worthy enemies a last stand," said Perturabo, rising and indicating the hideously mutated flesh of the monsters Fabius had brought aboard. "This was not an honourable victory, so we owe the Iron Hands an honourable death."
"That makes no sense," raged Kroger. "We need to push on quickly, kill them all before they can turn this ship into more of a death trap than it already is."
Perturabo drew Forgebreaker and swung it round, letting the killing face come to rest on Kroger's breastplate.
"Careful, my young Triarch," said Perturabo, his voice devoid of tone. "I need a plain speaker in the Trident, not a yapping dog. Be silent."
Kroger looked to Forex for support, but the first captain had the fingers of his right hand pressed to the side of his helm. His head nodded at whatever he was hearing over the vox, and he looked up. His alarm was obvious.
"My lord," said Forex urgently, "we need to get you off this ship."
Perturabo lowered his hammer and turned to the first captain.
"Explain."
"Barban Falk reports a massive build-up of power in the ship's engine reactors," said Forex. "They're almost overloaded, minutes at best from blowing this ship to radioactive debris."
Perturabo shook his head.
"It's a bluff," he said. "If the Iron Hands are dying here, they're going to do it fighting."
"You can't be sure of that," said Forex.
"I knew my brother," said Perturabo, "and his legion would not end their own lives like this, not when there are enemies left to fight."
"Ferus Manus is dead, my lord," said Forex. "Who can say what his legion of flesh-haters are capable of now that he's gone?"
"Not this," said Perturabo, adamant.
"No," said Kroger, with sudden certainty, confident of what he would do were the roles reversed. "You're wrong, my lord. They'll gladly blow this ship apart if they think they're going to kill you in the process. What are the lives of a few hundred legionaries matter against the killing of a Primarch? One ship of warriors measured against the life of the Lord of Iron? It's no question at all. I'm just surprised it's taken them this long to realize it."
Perturabo didn't reply, considering the words of his triarchs. With every second that passed, Kroger expected to feel the white-hot instant of detonation as the ship's reactor core exploded.
"My lord," pressed Kroger, "you wanted a plain speaker. Well, this is as plain as I can say it. You need to get off this ship right now. They'll end their lives in a nuclear fireball if they think you'll die too. But if it's just us, then they'll fight. We can take this ship. You know we can. But we can't do it with you aboard. You need to go and leave the killing to us."
Kroger tensed as Perturabo's cold eyes fixed on him. Berossus had been broken by Forgebreaker for less. At last, the Primarch nodded and drew the hammer across his shoulders.
No, he said. We all go. As you say, this ship is a death trap by now, and I'll lose no more warriors to Fulgrim's vanity. We will return to the Ironblood and blow this ship apart with our guns, and if the Andronicus gets in our way, then we'll gut it too.
Kroger grinned. This was the Iron Warrior's way of war. Absolute and unrelenting, remorseless and unforgiving.
We can't give the Iron Hands an honourable death, said Perturabo, but I'll take payment for their deaths from Fulgrim.
Forex nodded and said,
Falk, teleport Homer's engaged. Get us out of here.
Atesh Tasa struggled against the chemical poison keeping his limbs immobile, but it was like struggling against an implacable tide of webgun solution. The traitor apothecary regarded him curiously, as though they were old friends who had recently been reconciled after a period of estrangement.
The device on the dead warrior's chest, he said, his voice the hiss of parched dust in the desert. It is old technology, from the times before, is it not?
Tasa shook his head.
It is of no use to you. It is keyed to Captain Branthon's genome.
Fabius grinned and wagged a scolding finger before his face.
You salamanders make such terrible liars, said Fabius, running a cracked and grimy fingernail along the line of Tarsa's jawline, over his cheek to his eyes. I blame Vulcan.
Don't you dare say his name, spat Tasa.
Why not? Is there some tradition of Nocturne not to speak ill of the dead?
Vulcan lives, said Tasa, repeating the words like a mantra. Vulcan lives! Vulcan lives!
Fabius laughed.
Such conviction for one so ignorant of the truth.
Tasa gritted his teeth as he felt a painful awakening sensation in his extremities. His fingertips twitched.
Kill him, Fabius, said the howl-faced warrior. Take what you want and let us leave.
In time, said Fabius, and Tarsa's nerve endings danced painfully within his flesh.
He was able to control the involuntary motions with an effort of will. He pulled his fingers into a fist. The arachnid machine on the traitor apothecary's back hauled Tarsa to his feet, propping him up against the stasis casket. Fabius stared through the glass with a ferocious desire, his hooded eyes alight at the prospect of plundering the heart of iron from Branthon's body.
The things I will do with this device, he said hungrily.
You'll kill him, managed Tasa through gritted teeth.
And you think I...
Tasa swung his arm in a perfect right cross and smashed his fist into Fabius's face. Teeth broke and blood sprayed from the traitor apothecary's jaw as he reeled from the blow. The mechanized arachnid released Tasa and he slumped to his haunches. He tried to push himself to his feet, but the blow had taken everything he had. Fabius stood above him, the lower half of his face a mask of red, his black eyes furious.
You will suffer for that, he said. You will beg for death over the years I can keep you alive to endure my tortures.
Tasa looked up, and the ghost of a smile touched his lips.
Why do you smile? Demanded Fabius.
Brother Sharokin, said Tasa, is there something wrong with the floor?
Fabius turned to see the Raven Guard drop from the tangle of cables and pipework on the ceiling. Two black-bladed swords plunged into Fabius's chest, and oily black gore squirted from the wounds. The apothecary fell back, his rictus features twisted in open-mouthed horror.
Sharokin wrenched the swords out and pivoted on his heel to hurl one of his blades. It spun in the air and punched through the helm of one of the Emperor's children, who dropped with a strangled shriek of dissonant sound that echoed painfully in Tarsus' skull. Before Sharokin could finish Fabius, the last of the monsters threw itself at him. The Raven Guard flipped up and over Ulrak Branthon's casket, landing by the far wall with his slender-bladed gladius held high at his right shoulder. The creature smashed into the wall of the apothecarian, its body swelling before his eyes and crimson veins standing out on its muscles like hydraulic feeds on the verge of rupturing from the pressure. Whatever biological processes were at work within the beast, they were driving it into paroxysms of rage and strength. Blackened claws erupted from its fused hands, and rippling bone spikes exploded along the length of its spine as hissing drool spilled from its elongating crocodilian jaw.
"Right now would be good, brother," said Sharokin, though Tarsa had no idea to whom he was talking.
The gene-maddened beast charged at the Raven Guard with a bellow of hatred. Sharokin threw himself to the side, and the wall of the apothecarian exploded outwards in a cascade of sparking metal, snapped cabling, ribbed supports and coffered panels. A towering construction of bare steel and black-streaked warplate smashed through, with powerful mechanized strides and pounding arms, a rotating fist of crackling energy and hyperdense fiber bundle muscles took hold of the brutish space marine mutant and slammed its head against the wall. Incredibly, the beast's skull remained intact. It reeled from the blow and attempted to focus on the thing that had somehow managed to hurt it. Brother Bombastus, the iron thunder of Medusa, shrugged himself clear of debris and cable runs from the interior of the wall spaces. Too large to enter the apothecarium by any conventional means, Bombastus had made an unconventional entrance. Still bloating with rampant self-consumption, the mutant reared up on legs that cracked and swelled as they realigned themselves to some new and unfathomable genetic instruction. Its elongating arms slammed into Bombastus, its slavering jaw crunching down on his skull-stamped sarcophagus. Acid-drooling fangs tore deep gouges in his bare metal plates, and diamond-hard claws tore into his armour like plasma cutters on a Tech-Marine servo harness. Bombastus took hold of the creature's thickening neck and smashed the upper arc of his iron casket into its face. Bones shattered and fangs snapped as the entire front half of the creature's skull became instantly concave. Just for good measure, the storm bolter slung beneath Bombastus's fist roared. A mushrooming fountain of blood and brain matter sprayed the ceiling as the explosive shells detonated within the monster's brain cavity. The creature flopped like a rag doll in the dreadnought's grip, and its shredded remains were dropped to the floor with a harsh grate of distaste.
"Apothecary Tarsa," boomed Bombastus. "You called for help."
Tarsa almost laughed in relief as Sharokin attended to him. His body still felt weak, but at least he had command of it again.
"That I did, Brother Bombastus," he said, struggling to his feet and enclosing one fist in the palm of his hand. "Your assistance is most welcome."
Tarsa looked around for the Emperor's children who had come so close to killing him and disrupting Captain Branthon's stasis casket. They had fled at the sight of Bombastus, and Tarsa couldn't say he blamed them.
"Are you all right?" asked Sharokin.
"I'm fine, or at least I will be soon enough," said Tarsa.
Sharokin nodded and moved off to check on the two fallen Morlocks. Tarsa took a moment to collect himself as Bombastus leaned over to look down into Ulrak Branthon's casket. The captain's immobile face stared up, unmoving, and frozen in mid-sentence.
"I offered to give him this body of iron and steel," said Bombastus.
"And he refused," said Tarsa.
"He would not take what is not his." "It is not right that I exist and he does not."
Tarsa gestured to the rapidly decomposing corpse of the last mutant beast.
Right now, I am very glad that it is you that walks among us, Brother Bombastus.
You are Salamander, said Bombastus. You do not understand. Flesh is inherently flawed, and his will not long endure this drawn-out death. I have lived long enough in this iron shell, and it would be better for a captain of battle to be abroad than a simple warrior.
You are wrong, said Tarsa.
You presume too much familiarity, said Bombastus. You do not know me, and I would die a thousand times over if it gave my captain life again.
Tarsa had no answer for the dreadnought, and left him to his melancholy. He helped Sharakin lift Septus Thoic onto a listing examination gurney. The Morlock's armour was torn and bent out of shape, but he had survived the beating he'd taken. Both his arms were bent at angles that suggested multiple dislocations. Ignatius Newman pulled himself to his feet, wearing a dazed expression that told Tarsa he was clearly concussed from the sonic barrage that had felled him. "Are you all right?" he asked, as Newman retrieved his weapons. Newman did not respond, and Tarsa reached out to place a hand on the Morlock's arm.
"Brother Newman?"
"Are you speaking?"
asked Newman, his words coming too loud.
"Yes," said Tarsa. "Can you hear me?"
"What?"
"I said, can you hear me?"
Newman shook his head.
"I can't hear you. You'll have to shout."
Tarsa looked at the dried blood and tissue on Newman's cheeks and knew that whatever rudimentary hearing had been left to him after the plasma blast on Istvan was now gone. The Morlock was completely deaf. Wayland watched the power levels rising in the engine cores and felt the iron fingers of his left gauntlet twitching. He wasn't afraid as such. It had long been his secret belief that they would all die out here in the northern marches, unremembered and alone, at best a footnote in the future histories of this war. What concerned him was the fact that they might be about to die by the reckless actions of an Iron Father many had considered unfit for the position, a dangerous rogue element in the Legion machinery. Thematica was brilliant, no question of that, but the nature of his brilliance was that he learned more from his failures than he did from his successes. Wayland hoped the Sisypheum wouldn't be the last of Thematica's failures. Blazing circuits of light flared around Forex as the last of the teleportation energies dissipated into the damping coils encircling the chamber. Superconducting conduits bled the power required for teleportation into the energy soakaways, and a klaxon brayed in time with the pulsing bleed-off. Moments later, the teleport disc, a skull-etched podium of electrically scoured iron plates, was thronged with armoured figures. Forex felt the nauseous stomach-punch dislocation of teleport and clamped down on the familiar sickness.
"You don't like teleporting, do you?" said Kroger.
Forex shook his head.
"No, being broken up like that is like dying each time."
Kroger nodded as though he understood, and they stepped down from the podium as the warriors of the Iron Circle buzzed and clicked inside their armoured chassis. Their onboard systems would take a moment to realign after the translation. Perturabo strode from the disc and made his way from the chamber through an irising doorway as the energy coils dropped into the floor. Kroger and Forex followed the Lord of Iron, feeling imminent violence in his silence as they made their way back to the bridge. Falk was at the command station, a hololith floating in the air before him that displayed readings from the Iron Hand's ship and its unmistakable reactor overload.
"How long?" asked Perturabo.
"Less than a minute," said Falk.
Beyond the shimmering graphic, the main view screen showed the snub-nosed bullet of the enemy ship as it wallowed in space like the carcass of a brain-dead void whale. Their manoeuvring jets are firing, said Forex, noticing tiny corrective flares of thrust along the length of the ship. They've some power back.
Not enough, said Falk. This is just a last desperate attempt to put themselves as close to us as possible before their engines explode.
You're moving us clear? Asked Kroger.
Of course, snapped Falk, staring at a portion of the wall behind Kroger, as though seeing something in the faded paintwork of the bulkhead.
I had to wait until your return. But yes, we're moving away.
Will we be in the blast radius when that thing goes up? Asked Forex.
Falk switched the floating graphic to one of concentric spheres of effect. The Iron Hands ship sat at the centre with the Andronicus and the Iron Blood within the first impact ring.
Very much so, said Falk. We'll move away, but we'll still likely take a beating.
Perturabo held up a hand, his head cocked to one side as he studied the readings flaring from the hull and reactors of the enemy ship. He flicked between the energy emission readouts and the slowly rotating form of the Iron Hands vessel. Forex would relive this moment 100 times or more in an attempt to interpret Perturabo's expression. The corner of the Primarch's mouth twitched as though in amusement. Yet his eyes never lost their cold, calculating ice. His body language was tense, his battle collar still to the fore, but with a sanguinity that took the edge from his raw aggression. The Primarch was a mass of contradictions, but never more than at this moment.
"Hold here," said Perturabo.
"My lord," said Falk, "we're still in the primary blast zone. An explosion at this range would do us some real damage."
"I said, hold, Barbenfalk. Or do I need to repeat my orders to you every time?"
"No, my lord," said Falk, swiftly cutting power to the engines and holding them in place.
Forex felt a growing apprehension, but he had no fear that Perturabo did not know what he was doing.
"Armaments has a firing solution, my lord," said Kroger.
"Do not shoot," said Perturabo, moving to the front of the command deck and standing before the viewscreen. "I said that Fulgrim's Legion would pay for the deaths we suffered. This is that payment."
The engineering deck was as close an approximation of the ancients' idea of hell as could be imagined. A sweltering nightmare of scalding steam, superheated gases escaping from splitting conduits, and glaring red light. The bodies of the dead lay strewn around the cavernous space, servitors whose innards had boiled and engine seers whose exo-armour had been breached by the crushing radiation bleeds and sudden thermal spikes. Shadows moved in the sepulchral red gloom, monstrous beings with multiple arms and claws. The lords of this abode of the damned. Yet these were no demons, but Iron Hands, the masters of this vessel, and the very souls trying to save it. Thematica wrestled with multiple system outputs at once, letting the cognitive architecture scaffolded onto his brain by the Martian priests balance the woven threads of data at a speed beyond that which even the most gifted mortal could manage. To say that what he attempted was a delicate procedure was to say that advanced bio-augmetic neurosurgery would be somewhat challenging to a feral world savage. The reactor loads were a hair's breadth from breaching their containment fields and turning the ship into an expanding cloud of radioactive dust. The way Thematica looked at it, if he were able to wrangle the colossal energies correctly, then they might have a way out of this mess. If he couldn't, then they might at least do some damage to their attackers. The Emperor's Children vessel was pulling back from them, a swarm of firefly-bright traceries describing the arcs of escaping stormbirds and recalled boarding torpedoes on magnetic tethers. Curiously, the Iron Warrior's vessel was no longer in retreat. Did its captain suspect what he planned? Perturabo was aboard the Iron Blood, so it was entirely possible. But why hadn't he told the Emperor's Children? Freeing his mind from thoughts of the past,
Perturabo watched the gently rolling form of the Sisyphium with profound admiration for its crew. The Ironblood's data engines had finally identified the Iron Hand's vessel, its up-armoured and heavily modified silhouette causing the pattern-matching and energy signature algorithms numerous recognition errors along the way. Such were the differences in its structure and emissions that several iterations had even quantified it as a warship of the Greenskins. Perturabo had recognized the vessel long before, its underlying structure clear to him beneath the upgrades, modifications and patch repairs effected by its crew. The Iron Hand's ship was an ugly thing now, a prison shank compared to the gladiator's blade of the Andronicus. But a blade was a blade, and even the crudest could still kill, and the crew of the Sisyphium had murder in mind. A too-bright halo of nuclear reactions pulsed from its overburdened engines. A tsunami of electromagnetic radiation bloomed from the Sisyphium to engulf the Iron Blood and Andronicus. Dozens of consoles blew out in a barrage of sparks and flame as unshielded systems fused and overloaded. "Bones of Locos!" Falk swore as his command console erupted in flames. "Kroger, do you still have a firing solution?" demanded Forex. "Not a chance. Weapon or specs is blind." "Get it back," ordered Forex. "Give me a minute," snapped Kroger, struggling with a few fire control systems that remained intact. "We don't have a minute," snarled Forex, pushing Kroger out of the way. The panel was a blackened mess, but enough systems remained active to launch an unguided spread of torpedoes and a mesh pattern barrage.
"Do nothing," said Perturabo.
"But
I said do nothing," shouted Perturabo,
but by then it was too late to do anything anyway. A searing fireball of incandescent energy exploded from the Sisyphium's engines, like the tail of a comet approaching too close to a superdense star. The vessel shot forwards like a missile fired from a shoulder launcher, accelerating from a virtual standstill to escape velocity in the blink of an eye. The Sisyphium closed the distance to the Andronicus in a streak of laser brilliance and lanced into its flanks at a point just behind the beauteous vessel's plough-shaped bow. Gilded and ornamented as it was, the Andronicus was still a fighting vessel of the Legiones Astartes and was armoured to withstand missiles, torpedoes and explosive ordnance. Against the speed, mass and prow weapons of the Sisyphium, it had no chance. The hull of the Emperor's Children vessel crumpled in the face of the tapered missile of the Iron Hand's ship, the impact a punching thrust through its guts that sent billowing scads of ignited oxygen blossoming into space. The blazing wake of the Iron Hand's ship ignited the atmosphere within the Andronicus and sheared the prow from its body as keenly as a guillotine. The bow spun away on a spiralling wake of burning oxygen, and armoured plates along the entire front half of the vessel buckled and warped as internal explosions cascaded along its length. Fire spurted from ruptures in the hull, and beams of brilliant light speared from compartment breaches as the cataclysmic damage burned the Emperor's Children vessel from the inside. An expanding cone of fire and debris detonated outwards as the momentum and weapons fire of the Sisyphium punched through the vitals of the Third Legion's ship. Like a bullet exploding from the body of a gunshot victim, the Sisyphium blasted from the interior of the Andronicus, trailing molten debris and a flame-wreathed halo of ignited plasma. It rippled with void haze, and Perturabo saw the tortured squalls of light tearing at the edges of the exit wound as its shields dragged kilometres worth of armour plating in its magnetic wake. Though notions of up and down were an irrelevance in space, the Andronicus listed downwards, swinging around like a punch-drunk fighter. Its gyroscopic systems fought to stabilise the vessel, but the damage was too severe. Too sudden and too shocking to correct. Though her shipmaster fought to save her, Perturabo knew the Andronicus was doomed. Energy fields shimmered in a desperate attempt to preserve internal atmosphere as the front half of the vessel spun away. Its structural integrity gone, The Andronicus began to tear itself apart as its enormous mass and the eager riptides of the warp reached up to claim their prize.
"By the 12," breathed Forex, watching the awesome sight of a starship dying before his very eyes. To see a star-faring Leviathan destroyed in battle was a sight no warrior could ever forget. The invincible defeated, the invulnerable humbled. The Andronicus was dead in space, its running lights flickering for a moment before being extinguished. The ship's engine still flared in fits and starts, twisting the gutted carcass from the carefully mapped path laid before them. In moments, it would be swallowed by the bleeding warp currents, another victim of the Empyrean's tempestuous wrath.
"Do you think anyone's left alive on there?" asked Falk.
"There will be some," said Forex, moving to the surveyor station and linking it to the launch decks. "A few will have reached saviour pods, but some are still out in the void, aboard stormbirds and torpedoes. There are bound to be more left aboard the wreck, too. I'm launching a full spread of rescue craft."
Perturabo watched as the Trident began re-establishing control throughout the Iron Blood, establishing a contravallation of picket ships and organising the rescue effort for the crew of the Andronicus. Thousands had died in its sudden, merciless demise, but Forex could yet save hundreds with his unmatched logistical nous. He watched the Iron Hands vessel twist on its axis, more agile than anything that ugly had a right to be. Still bleeding a tail of ignited plasma and mag-locked debris, the Sisyphium arced down towards a knot of storm clouds that looked to offer no easy way through.
"My lord," said Kroger, his fingertips hovering over fire control, "do we shoot now?"
"No," said Perturabo. "Leave them. They've earned that much."